Daddy, we live in the dream, captain in the field. I am a drink like Champions League. Every 25, it's even the only feed. Man, I'm about to be rolled like a Ferrari. We got a bunch, this is the love of the tweet. Create my own leagues, so off we compete.
Although here's Canapri, he's on a hat-trick and he's in.
This is Corner Flag Talk.
Okay, guys, and welcome back, because this actually will be the second part of our pod. On today, I have a very special guest. I don't know if he knows this, but he is a big reason as to why I got into podcasting. I have been listening to his pod for, good grief, it's nearly 9 years now. Wow, that is long. And his name is Elliot. You can follow him on Twitter at Yankee Gunner. He's part of the award-winning Arsenal Vision post-match podcast, and he's been gracious enough to be here on with us. Elliot, how are you today?
Yeah, doing great, John. Thanks for having me on. I'll apologize in advance that I don't have more time. I'd love to have more time, and given how much I talk, I know it's hard to get through any conversation with me in a short time span, but we'll definitely do our best.
So what we're going to do here today, guys, is that, well, you all know, even a Corner Flag isn't necessarily an Arsenal pod. I'm an Arsenal fan, so obviously all the content I consume tends to be around that. And I guess I did think when me and Elliot were organizing to do this that we were going to do this off of what would have been a positive result after the Everton game. But I do think that this probably provides us with a little bit more talking points going forward. But before that, Elliot, I want you to tell me, at the start of the season, what were your expectations for the team going forward? Not your prediction, points, whatever, but what was your expectations for a sign of progress going forward?
So my expectations were that we would be in or at least competing for the top four with a good point total. I think my take is always that when you talk about where you should finish in the table, it may be better to talk about where you're going to finish points-wise, right? Because some seasons you could have 66 points and be fourth. Some seasons you could have 75 points and be fifth. And you don't really have control over what that outcome looks like.
Yeah.
So my expectation was more points mid to high 70s was what I was hoping for, roughly. I think top four was the expectation as well. But more than that, what I really wanted to see was a consistent improvement in the attack, building off what we had started to do in the second half of last season, and just creating a higher volume of chances and better opportunity to score goals, incorporating pressing football, incorporating more possession up the pitch, and creating the kind of pressure that makes it hard for the lesser teams to withstand what you're doing so that we're not edgy games. Ultimately, I think where we are obviously is beyond my wildest expectations, beyond anyone's wildest expectations, being the best start in the history of the club for the Premier League. But the expectation was progress and a clear chance to consolidate a position in the top.
So for me, what it was, like my co-host on the pod, he laughed at the day. I said that I expected us to be title relevant until the World Cup, in terms of points per game. Because the reason for that is that when we look at the consistent team that we did put out between last year when Aubameyang got dropped to the end of March or so, when it is that Tierney and Partey got injured, we were running on a points per game basis that was like the City and Liverpool that were going toe-to-toe every year. And while I did not think that that was sustainable for us, at least at that point I didn't think it was sustainable for us across an entire season as yet, I do think that we were heading in that direction. So what I expected for us was, especially given the preseason that we did have, was to start strong, get that going, be like how Chelsea were title relevant in terms of they were in and around the table, but weren't necessarily title competitors. Now, obviously, like you said, what we did this season has been beyond our dreams. And I think it is an example of where when you make signings and your players make natural progressions in their careers, that I don't believe that you go up one level. I think that, for example, the improvements we made in strike with Nketiah's progress, and he is who's coming in, sent us up a few levels, and we've seen enough on effects it had on the rest of the team. We see like how Jesus has improved, Martinelli has made our left side so dynamic that right now we are somewhat missing that in some of these games where teams try to be more cagey, more physical and stuff with us. That being said, what do you think has been some of the more major key points in us being these leaders in the title race to only have two losses, two draws whole season in the league. What do you think is the key component behind, or some of the key components behind?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. Just the organic improvement of the younger players, right? So Martin Odegaard has gone up a level. Bukayo Saka has gone up a level. At least prior to the World Cup, Martinelli had gone up a level. Bringing in Jesus, obviously a huge impact, but we can see now that even without Jesus, largely we're able to play the football we want to play. Yeah. You know, when you have a young team, one of the things you're banking on is that as that young team ages into their prime years or closes in on their prime years, they're just going to improve as a group. So I think we've seen some of that. I think also, clearly Mikel Arteta was able to use the opportunity to have a full preseason with a pretty consistent group of players to structure exactly the type of football he wanted to put into place. When you think of some of the aging players that were going out and some of the new players that were coming in, there was a lot of turmoil, a lot of turnover. Think of go back to the start of last season. We didn't really bring in the group that was going to become the group until the very end of the window after we had already basically lost three games. They had to hit the ground running. This summer, he was clearly able to install the system he wanted. And so maybe the biggest change is just Mikel getting to have a whole summer with a pretty consistent group to really map out how he wanted to play. And you see that in the way we're able to keep the ball up the pitch, press more effectively, play a higher line, put more pressure on opposition defenses. And you know, whether it was a Euros summer, COVID disruptions, aging players leaving, late in the window, major additions overhauling the squad, Mikel didn't really have a summer to build the system he wanted to have in place for a season like he finally did this summer. And I think that was a big component.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, like, when we look at Mikel's progression as a coach, like, forgetting the caveat that this was his first job, right, that I think, you know, when Ten Hag came into the job and Potter has come into the job, people were trying to use Mikel as a benchmark in terms of how much time you should be giving a coach. But I think a little bit of that is even a bit which came first, the chicken or the egg kind of situation, where, like, I would like to believe at least that the summer where we laid our foundation, so the players that he wanted to get that group together, was last summer, the summer before the 21-22 season. I would like to think that if we did have the COVID and the financial restrictions that we had as a club, that summer might have happened the year before, where we did bring in four or five players to set the foundation. And yeah, it might feel like if we took a while to get here. But I think when you look at the kind of environment that Mikel has to manage under, not just for a new manager, but for any manager, has been extremely unique. To have to do the squad turnover that he did, to have to go through COVID, and your first, he didn't even make a year yet as a coach, to have to go through COVID and that kind of financial restriction. And when you compare that to, you know, the backing that Ten Hag had, you know, Ten Hag had two losses within the league. Their response was to sign Casemiro, was to sign Anthony for $100 million, who can't even shine Saka's boots. You know, this is the kind of backing that they got outside of a COVID environment, whereas we had to sell somebody who became our starting keeper at that point to generate funds to trigger a release clause for Thomas Partey at that point. And I think that as we see the season go, we've seen how much this team believes in him, believes in the system that he puts in place. And we've seen even with the reason that even squad players, and I say that so loosely, in Ketia and Vieira, are willing to wait for their moment to come in and to do good is because they've seen the progress that other players have made under him so far.
This is tricky for me because in a way, I think sometimes when things are going well under a manager, we attribute everything to the manager, right?
True.
So, true, to be fair, also when they're going badly, we attribute everything. Right.
Yeah.
So when you're stuck with an aging Lacazette who can't move anymore, instead of saying, oh, the issue is the club hasn't given us what we need at a striker, we say the manager's failing. Right. But vice versa, when Martin Odegaard becomes one of the best players in the Premier League or Bukayo Saka becomes one of the best players in the Premier League, our tendency is to say, look what Mikel has done with these players. Right. I think the hallmark of a good manager is not necessarily that he makes players better, because I sort of think that work ethic and talent combine to make players achieve what they can in the game. I think what a manager can do to bring that out of a player is put them in positions to be their best self, right? So Odegaard, the role, Ben White's a great example. I don't know how good Ben White is. I think he might be really, really, really good, but I don't know. What I know is Arteta has found a way to use Ben White that makes him look like one of the best players in the league in the position he's playing.
Yeah.
Do I think Ben White is one of the best fullbacks in the league? Between us, I don't think he is. Do I think he's playing like one of the best fullbacks in the league? He absolutely is. That's a great example of Arteta's influence, because if you put Ben White like in the Trent Alexander-Arnold role at Liverpool, he can't do that. Right. Yeah. If you put him in an overlapping, you know, wing back style fullback role, he's not going to be good at that. So there are certain players like Martin Odegaard who I think would have hit this kind of level wherever they went. Right. Gabriel Jesus, give him a chance. He's always going to thrive. But players like Ben White, you know, really good example. What Shaq is doing in the eight, I don't think Shaq is naturally an eight, but Mikel has found a way to give him a role that he can just about do at a high level. So there's some examples of players that I think are really being maximized by the system and the manager. And then other players who I think are just that good. So I'd say, you know, a Zinchenko, a Ben White, a Granit Xhaka, players you're seeing thrive in a system that supports them. And then other players like Partey and Odegaard and Jesus, Martinelli and Saka, who are just so talented that I think if they went to Real Madrid or Manchester City or Barcelona, you'd see them performing just as well at this point, you know?
Yeah, on that point, I would like to ask you about some specific players and where do you think about them in, like, not just the league, but, like, within, like, the world and stuff like that, right? I know you all don't necessarily get into this on the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast, so I'm going to tickle your brain a little bit. I have said for a while now that I do think that Bukayo Saka for this season has been the best right winger in the world. I generally think that nobody comes close to him. And, in fact, it blows my mind to think that somebody that come from our academy that we spent $0 on has a claim, at the very least a claim, to be the best right wing in the world. I still think that all factors level and stuff like that, I still would probably have Salah above him in terms of a more general conversation, maybe. But in terms of right now and this entire season, I generally don't think anybody comes close. What do you think about that?
So I don't watch enough football outside the Premier League to be confident in.
We could just assume they are all not as good.
Mm-hmm. I think he's probably the best at the position in the league. That's for sure. I think if you look at teams that have achieved a lot without having to spend like City spend, they use that kind of good fortune out of their academy to help bootstrap their development. So if you look at Liverpool, I do think Trent Alexander-Arnold has been one of the best players, not just in his position, but in the world for the last six or seven seasons, five seasons, whatever. Yeah. While he may be underappreciated because he's always England don't pick him. He's a defensive liability. The fact is we have never seen a fullback in the Premier League provide the kind of creative output that Trent Alexander-Arnold has created. And I think he was a hand in glove fit for what Klopp wanted to do when he was free, right? He was out of their academy. You look at Tottenham Hotspur, who have, you know, achieved so much by not winning any trophies, not finishing with any trophies whatsoever. But to be fair, all kidding aside, they've at least not been a laughingstock. They did get to a Champions League final. They have consistently finished above us, unfortunately. How did they do that? They did that on the back of getting the best striker in the league out of their academy, right? They bootstrapped that way. And how are Arsenal doing this? We're doing this on the back of some smart purchases, for sure, but that academy player in Bukayo Saka, who's developing into one of the best players in the world at his position, who we got for free. So I think unless you're Manchester City or Manchester United or Chelsea from a resource standpoint, having at least one of those foundational pieces come out of your academy, be loyal to your team, have no interest in leaving, you know, love the club and have the level of talent to elevate the project. I think that is a critical component to any project like the one we're in. So I think he is probably, like, I wouldn't take Salah over him right now, right? Because Salah's the age he is and Saka's the age he is. If you said you could swap Saka for Salah for the rest of this season, just for the rest of this season to try to get the title, it's an interesting question, right? Because
it is interesting.
I mean, then you run into the whole issue of how important is the feeling in the group? How important is the mood? How important is the relationship between the players? How much of what we're doing right now is not just about the talent of the players, but how much they want to fight for each other and achieve this together with this specific group. So I just think there's a strange alchemy in football where sometimes things all work in concert together to produce an outcome greater than the sum of their parts. I wouldn't change it. I think he is going to be the best player in his position if he isn't already. And I think having that foundational piece come from your academy is a critical component of any successful project that goes on to achieve big things.
Yeah, totally agree with that. I think we need to pay tribute to the fact that Tottenham are the 5-time in a row winners of finishing above us, which completely combined to achieve for truly. Normally we don't curse on this podcast. That was an absolute concentration. My bad. Next player, Odegaard. So I'll be very honest. I was part of that camp that wanted us to sign Maddison over Odegaard in summer of 21, 22. After the loan spell, I thought it was underwhelming. And to be fair, I am somebody who actually was a really big fan of him at Sociedad. And I thought that Real Madrid were going to really incorporate him really highly. Didn't really work out that way. Then he came. And he had last season. And I felt like I appreciated him a lot more. But then I thought coming down to the end of the season, it wasn't necessarily leadership, but the ability to want to grab games by the scruff of the neck, I thought that he lacked. And we were giving him the technical keys as well as the literal armband going into the season. And I had question marks over that as well. And what he has done this season to make me do an entire 180 has been brilliant. I genuinely believe that he's been the best player in the league this season. Now, I say that with the caveat that I know what Haaland is doing is inhuman at the rate that he's doing, and I don't deny that. But I think when we look at all the narratives that we've been fighting this season to reach where we have reached, the leader of this team has been him, and the extent to which that he has not shied away from grabbing his scuffling against teams like Wolves, where we've had bad luck in the past, away to Tottenham, away to Chelsea, at that Liverpool game, all these games that he's been willing to stand up and to make a difference, and not just a difference technically, but substantially as well with goals and assists, stuff like that. It has been a revelation for me to see him like this.
There's just not a single thing I can say other than he is every single thing you could hope for from a player in that position and as a captain of the club. He is a class act. He is a brilliant representative of the club. He is a leader on the pitch. He is a teacher on the pitch. He is fully committed. He plays with the level of intensity that's demanded. He comes up with big goals in big moments and big assists in big moments. From a talent standpoint, he might be the best player in the league. From a sort of role model standpoint, he's everything you could ask for. I think the captaincy has been a challenge for Arsenal for so long, with very few moments of real respite from what otherwise has been, I think, a problematic string of captaincies going back years. He has put that to rest. Look, in that summer when it was Buendia or Odegaard, right, or Maddison, I thought Maddison was overpriced. I didn't think we should go for him. Buendia looked good to me. The numbers said he was good. He was going to be the cheapest of the group. He was the right age. He had done some stuff in the Premier League. I thought he was the guy. In part, because I just thought we were chasing a dead end with Odegaard. I did not believe Madrid were going to let this player go. So I was like, why are we going to spend the summer chasing a guy we're not going to get? Obviously, had I known we could get him and get him at the price we did, I would have been fully on board with that. But even having said that, I don't think I knew he had this level. I thought he could be a very good, consistent performer in the role. I did not think he could be in the conversation for the best player in the Premier League, which he absolutely is in the conversation for right now. And so, this is my point about the alchemy of a winning team. Getting the captaincy right, getting this player in at this level of his career, you know, it is such a hand-in-glove fit. And the way he has bonded to and with his teammates is spectacular. I adore Martin Odegaard. Like, I got the chance to interview him in London a couple weeks ago, which was, you know, a highlight for me, obviously, of my, I mean, guess I could say life.
I would like to say that you are a lot stronger than me. I definitely would have cried.
I was on the brink of crumbling for sure. It was an overwhelming occasion, all told. But like, just the first thing he said, I asked him a question, and before he even answered it, he said, before I answer anything, I just want to say how fortunate I am to be here, how much I appreciate having a chance to be a part of this. It was the art unveiling, right? And like, okay, you'd be like, well, yeah, that's just the right thing to say. But look, this is a super wealthy, super famous footballer. He could have been like, who are you? I'm not even going to talk to you. He could have been like, yeah, man, season's going great. Okay, good to chat with you. Not only did he give me the time, he started by making sure that he expressed gratitude for being included in the event. And like, he's just a class act. And I think that doesn't always win you games, but we've had players who weren't a class act, who weren't committed, who didn't feel a part of us. And we should celebrate having a captain who has brought those values back in a powerful way, you know?
Yeah, I don't have you for much longer, so I'm going to just ask you some quick stuff over the Everton game. So it's a kind of well-known thing at this point that they were very structured against us. I actually wasn't upset at the loss. Like, obviously, I'm disappointed when we don't pick up points, right? But I thought Everton did their job well, and they stopped us from having any real moments. And at that point, it's more about us and what we need to do better. And I think when he made your talking points come out, is that, look, Jesus, that's probably a game for him, where he goes between the lines on the left-hand side, busy connector across that trio between him, Xhaka, and Nelly, right? Going forward, we don't have it for a few games. If we come up against this type of situation again, how would you approach it? Now, I've seen some people suggest things like starting Tierney, starting Zinchenko in midfield, and starting either one of Trossard or Martinelli higher up. So that way, we could get the verticality from Tierney that we probably are getting from Martinelli right now for him to do some interchange of movements.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think one of the biggest problems we have to solve, we don't have a lot of problems. And I think one of the mistakes you can make when you lose a game is think, we got to change things. How are we going to change it? We got, you know, okay, now we got a problem. And it's like,
totally agree.
Sometimes if you say, okay, wait a minute, we've been playing the same way all season long. We've lost twice, once where we maybe didn't deserve to, and drawn once. Like, I think one of the hardest things to do in football is to know when not to change anything, to know when not to react to dropped points. Because the problem with that is you could take something that actually wasn't broken, and in trying to fix it, you can break it. I do think that we need to find a way to get Martinelli or whoever is playing left wing into positions to be able to be more impactful. Because right now, if you look at average positions, average touches, things like that,
the left
wing player is really isolated, really wide.
Yeah.
Now he's doing that to try to pull apart the defensive lines, right? So that Nketiah has more room to run onto things, so that when we overload on the right with Odegaard, White, and Saka, and Nketiah's over there, we can also switch to Martinelli in space. I don't think the switch has happened fast enough against Everton. I mean, if you just go back and watch that game, Martinelli's in tons of space plenty of times. We just didn't get the ball over there fast enough. And that the fix may not be to change anything. The fix may just be to find the open man. You know what I mean? Play better.
Yeah.
Like, I know it sounds dumb. Maybe the fix is just play better. They were very physical. They were very compact. They were very, you know, up for it. The pitch wasn't great, which makes it hard to execute. So sometimes you have to just do nothing. I do think that as the game wore on, though, the Zinchenko role is crucial to how we play, and he's been a huge, huge part of our success. But some games, maybe you bring Tierney on and let him overlap, and Martinelli can get into the fourth channel instead of that fifth channel out wide, and you can create a little bit more overlap. I also think Trossard can come on for Nketiah so that you have a bit, because Trossard will play false nine. He will come to the top of the D and connect. And Nketiah doesn't want to come to the top of the D. He wants to get on the shoulder of the last defender and make a darting run. He wants to be a fox in the box, and that wins us games for sure. But it's not always going to pull defenses apart. So,
would you ever consider trying Trossard in the Xhaka role?
So, Clive on my podcast, our podcast, like has talked that up. I haven't seen it done. I think the question is...
Yeah, but we need to put a caveat with Clive saying that. Clive has been trying to retire my boy for, 5 years?
He has been trying to retire Xhaka for a long time. Look, I thought Xhaka had one of his less good games against Everton, but so did everybody. I'll say this simply. When it's not working, don't go like for like. Change the system, right? Do something that fundamentally changes what the opposition has to do. For me, there were two clear things we needed to change. We either needed a focal point at the top of the D to connect things, or we needed someone that could push the left wing closer to goal and create overloads on the... they were funneling everything wide and then 2v1s on the outside. So either get Tierney on to overlap so that when they go 2v1, Martinelli can play Tierney in and you can cut it back to Nketiah, or get Trossard at the top of the D so you can do those little connections and try to play 1-2s on the edge of the area. Like, I think the problem with going Trossard for Martinelli, the problem with going Vieira for Odegaard, is you just went like for
I actually thought that was a bad sub. Like, even though I didn't think Odegaard was having a great game, he wasn't having an effective game, you still don't take him off. And I mean that from the point of view of, like, he is our control. The thing is, you really believe that he's somebody that could craft something out of nothing. And listen, I am literally wearing a Xhaka jersey right now. I have been his biggest supporter that of anybody that I ever know. And I will tell you that I think he should have come off yesterday. In fact, I thought, especially when we were 1-0 down, risk it. Try Vieira and Odegaard on the pitch at the same time. And
totally agree. Gonna
get somebody to try and operate in the fourth channel so that we could have somebody between the lines there, because you're going to leave Nketiah on. And normally, I do think Arteta is somebody who isn't afraid to be brave in those situations, but I think that he also put himself in that position where he couldn't sub off Xhaka because he subbed on Jorginho. And I think that he would have felt like that was too much to give up defensively by subbing off both Partey and Xhaka in the game.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And ultimately, Mikel hasn't really had anything on the bench that he could trust. So this is a new layer to the onion for Mikel too. Looking on that bench and actually having players that can change the game and can be important. Sometimes
they're still injured as well.
Yep. Sometimes your football's working and you just say, you know what? I just want a slightly different quality in this position. And you go Trossard for Martinelli or you go Vieira for Odegaard. But when your football isn't working, I don't think like for like changes it. I think like for like still gives the opposition the same problem to solve.
Yeah,
change the problem they need to solve, right? That's the key. Can your subs change the problem you need to solve? And I think Mikel will maybe look, he's just figuring out Trossard. That's a new opportunity for him. Yeah. Like, I think you will start to see how he can utilize the resources he has to change the problem that the opposition has to solve. But look, the biggest thing I would say from this, John, don't change just because you lost. The football has worked. Yeah. It will continue to work. The hardest thing to do, I think, in football is not react to a loss. And I think the best thing Mikel could do in this moment is not react. Just go face Brentford, doing exactly what we've been doing. And I absolutely believe it'll get us a result.
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up here. I just want to say thank you again to Elliot. Like, this means a lot to me. Trust me, it really does.
And I'm sorry it took so long to get it together and that I didn't have more time. So.
No, it's fine. It's really fine. I highly recommend anybody, well, especially Arsenal fans, really, to go and subscribe to their pod, to follow all of them. Follow Paul with a little caution. That is the only one.
Yes, agreed.
And listen, I literally only have two Patreons that I listen to. I listen to these guys every day. I really recommend you guys go and listen to them. So,
thanks, John.
Yeah. This will be the end of our pod as well. So catch you guys next time. See you soon. Take it easy. Later.